Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Be sure to throw me a follow on Twitter at Zach_Goodall, as well as my co-host, Chris Thornton, who joins me today. You can find him at Misto Cristofo. What's up, Misto?
Stuff. It's my day off. Feels good.
Yeah, I can't relate. I'm about to head into work, but figured we'd go ahead and get this pod out there for the people. Kind of recapping the Jaguars-Falcons game from Saturday night, talking about some interesting stuff that we found in that game. We got a full schedule ahead for this week as well. I'm going to talk about the wide receiver position after the loss of Marquise Lee, projecting some roster cuts as that day is on Saturday, and hopefully we can put together a little preview episode for the Buccaneers game on Thursday, the four-string game that everyone is so excited about. But before any of that, I want to let you guys know, be sure to throw the podcast a subscription anywhere you can listen to podcasts, wherever you're listening to right now, Google Play, Spotify, iTunes. Go ahead and leave us a subscription, rating, review. Check out the Locked On Jaguars handle. Be sure to follow along as we give you the best content that we can give you every day. So we'll go ahead and get right into it. Chris, there were, I guess, plenty of headlines from this week three preseason game. Marquise Lee's injury certainly being one of them, but none more, you know, talked about, scrutinized across the nation than, and I guess we're kind of used to this by now, quarterback Blake Bortles. He threw two interceptions on the night, and they weren't good, but people are kind of ignoring that he also went 17 of 23 for 204 yards and did move the ball efficiently otherwise. What were your takeaways on his performance?
Both interceptions to me were like, I don't think really either of them were as bad as the Harrison Smith one. The first one was a really good play by the linebacker to just get his hand on it. Because if Blake puts that ball maybe like a foot back, then that's an easy completion across the middle. But, I mean, that interception, obviously you don't want any interceptions. But that one I feel like was more of a play on the defender than it was a bad throw by Blake. The second one was a little more of a bad throw. But I don't know if Didi maybe didn't run the right route because Bortles kind of put the ball almost toward Didi, would have kind of had a sideline grab it, but kind of airmailed it behind him. So, but I thought Blake did look pretty well, aside from those two throws, moved the ball really well, was able to kind of shake off that early interception and continue to just kind of drive the ball down the field and then put the offense in position to score some touchdowns and get some field goals. So all in all, I would give probably Blake's performance like a 7.5 out of 10. Could definitely improve, but it's not as bad as the national media is making it seem.
See, I thought the interceptions were a little worse than you are giving them credit for, but like I also agree with you completely on the rest of his game. Like there were definitely times where he was able to space the ball out really well and be able to move the offense efficiently, you know, also working with the running game. I thought the first interception was, I agree with you, you can't necessarily pin the interception part on him, because of the really good play by the underneath linebacker. At the same time, Blake needs to see that underneath linebacker, because that is a type of play that they like to run a lot. Those, you know, check down underneath to a receiver. He's not too far ahead of the line of scrimmage, right in the middle of the field. Teams are going to be preparing for that, and they're going to put that underneath linebacker there that can jump up and make plays that Blake might not detect. He needs to learn to start detecting that, because that's going to lead to a batted pass that could get intercepted. The second one on Didi, it did look like he gave up on the route, but at the same time, I thought it was so overthrown that it didn't really matter. Like, he shouldn't have given up, but the ball was also really bad. But yeah, other than that, I thought his performance was fine. If you take out the two interceptions, what, 17 to 21, technically? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's pretty damn good. I'm not going to hold him to too much in that game. Last year, he had a really bad preseason. He ended up being totally fine. And I think someone tweeted it yesterday that in his previous three preseasons before that, he actually played very well in the preseason and then didn't play well in the regular season. So we'll see. I don't think it's anything to really to hold our hats on for too poor of a performance. I think he'll end up being fine going forward. But we won't be able to see him this week because it looks like it'll be Tanner Lee time.
Oh, God.
We don't even need to talk about Tanner Lee yet today. We'll wait to drown in those sorrows later in the week. But what were some of your other observations from the game? There were a couple of interesting notes. I'm sure we'll talk about the Lee injury. There were some unique offensive packages that were put out there. Some two running back sets. Those could be really interesting going forward.
Yeah, we could kind of talk about that a little bit, but I'll just lead off by saying Matt Ryan's overrated. Jalen Ramsey, he wanted no part of Jalen Ramsey except for the one throw that, who was it, Sanu, that had like the acrobat catch. I'm not sure who was on him.
But I think so, yes.
That's really the only way you're getting yards on Ramsey is like little short, like out-of-bound routes that kind of negate the ability for a big play for the receiver. Or you got to do something crazy like that to get a catch on Jalen, which I guess is okay. If you have to really try your absolute best to get a catch on our CB1, then I guess I could take that. But Matt Ryan wanted no business of Jalen Ramsey during that game, and that was very apparent.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the first things that I noticed while watching the game was on that first drive, Jalen applying pressure on a blitz to Matt Ryan's right side. And I was just like, oh, I really wonder if he's going to get home here, because if so, that would be the perfect epitome of his GQ interview.
And then DJ Hayden's probably a better edge rusher than Dante Fowler Jr.
Yeah, that's one. That's another thing that I noticed is he seems to have picked up right where Colvin left off in terms of being able to rush the passer.
Yeah, I mean, what he had. Did he have two sacks or just one? I know he almost got home on a sack. I wasn't sure if he got it, but I know he did get a sack.
He had a sack, almost got home on another. There was a couple of pressures that he had in total, but he seems to be doing exactly what they asked Colvin to do in, from that perspective.
And then Patman looked pretty solid replacing AJ Bouye, who is out with illness. So Patman, I believe... What is that, the third straight week that Patman started now?
I'd say so, yeah. He told me when I talked to him and did an interview with him this past week that he's really, you know, trying to take advantage of all the opportunities he's getting, prove himself not only as a nickel guy but an outside guy as well, and I say he's been taking advantage of those opportunities so far.
Yeah, I mean, Patman's looked really good. I did an article pod, I think, at the beginning of the offseason listing top five trade candidates, and I think I actually had Patman at like three, because I know that his value can bring. And if the Jaguars didn't have, I won't say a weak cornerback depth, but it's not the strongest, he probably would garner some interest from other teams, because he could probably go into a lot of other teams and probably start outside, which obviously gives you some trade ammo. So I doubt the team lets him go at this point, but if they were to, I wouldn't be surprised if they were able to somehow muster up like a fifth or sixth round pick for Patman.
Yeah, I just don't see it happening, though, because they don't have that depth, like you said. I mean, there's a very strong chance that two of their depth corners are going to end up being undrafted guys just from this year. Mm-hmm. Then, like that should take us to our first break. When we come back, we're going to go in depth a little bit on the two running back sets, pardon me, that the Jaguars were running against the Falcons. Just kind of a unique look on offense that could end up being something special going forward.
You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually, it's what team to bet on this week. The truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you gotta check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they're your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. That you win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. MyBookie.
So offensive coordinator Nate Hackett has been criticized in the past for not being creative. Now, whether you agree with that or not, I'm not sure. But the idea that he likes to run this heavy, heavy run offense and hide the QB has led to the perception that he's not that creative. I'm starting to disagree. And I think one of the perfect like plays just from last year that can kind of give you a hint that he wasn't going to just not be creative is that like double play action, the play action handoff to the running back, play action sweep to a receiver, and then Blake, what's it? Does he, sometimes he lets one rip, sometimes he dumps it off, but no matter what, there's always the ability for chunk yardage. That was kind of the hint that we got that maybe this upcoming year there would be a lot more creativity once the offense got things down. And we started to see that on Saturday night against the Falcons. They started breaking out two running back sets. It could go a combination of ways. It could go Fournette and Yeldon. It could go Fournette and Grant, Yeldon and Grant. They broke them out, and to make things better, the offense played really well. The run game, I'm trying to see exactly how many yards they had. I've got to pull it up right now. Between the three of them, as they all worked with the first team, and it was something really cool to see because it takes pressure off of the rest of the running backs, especially running back Leonard Fournette. You have Fournette and Grant out there. People most of the time will say, oh, that ball's going to Fournette. He's their bell cow. Like, that's just what they're going to do. Then they gave the ball to Grant, and I think they faked a toss to Fournette out of the shotgun. Grant went 20-some yards. Chris, this is a unique look for this offense that wants to run so much power, but this is a lot more outside work. What were your takeaways on the two running back sets? How do you think they can be utilized going forward?
That last one that you mentioned was the one that really grabbed me. You had Fournette, I believe, to the right of Blake, and you had Corey Grant to the left. When they snapped the ball, Corey Grant kind of looks like he's going to go into pass blocking, and then he kind of cuts up and cuts to the left, almost like an HB screen pass. And then Fournette was kind of just going out wide, unblocked. So Blake pumps to Fournette, which probably makes a few defenders bite, but then dumps it off to Corey Grant underneath, who has nobody on him, and then gets a chunk play for about 20 or something yards. And when I saw that, I was really intrigued by it because it was a really effective play, and I was like, that's a really deadly combo to have Fournette out of the back, who they really worked in early on passing plays, and then they were able to find Grant underneath to get that big chunk play.
Grant played a little bit in the second half, so he might be adding on to this, but for the most part, these three guys played in the first half. They combined for 108 yards rushing and 80 yards receiving. As if the... It's hard to assume that the best rushing team in the NFL can get better a year removed from their being the number one rushing team. Fournette was the majority of that, playing in 13 games and receiving the majority of the handoffs. People often complained about how Grant wasn't being utilized. Yeldon kind of came along as a number two guy when Fournette was hurt and Grant obviously flashed. Now they're showing the possibility that all three of these guys could be utilized to the best of their strengths, and at the same time, keeping a really great balance in between them. This running attack can really be deadly this year, and I think a lot of that will also come from help along the interior offensive line in the signing of Chris's son, Andrew Norwell. But give me a take on, A, how Norwell did and how you see this rushing attack moving going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you get one of the best offensive linemen and left guards in the league, your O-line gets that much better. And that was apparent on Leonard Fournette's long touchdown run. Immediately, the first thing that I saw when that play finished was Norwell blocking downfield. And then if you look back, he's basically just shielding Leonard Fournette from several defenders. He's basically just standing in front of the defenders and kind of holding his arms out to hold them back, kind of like safe security. So that was the very first thing that was apparent. And I saw somebody on the timeline post this morning a picture. It was a back end view of the defenders, kind of the whole opening up on that play. And it's like last year, Leonard Fournette probably runs into these defenders, which I think is very true. And then this year he makes the cut play, cuts back and gets the long, 27 yard touchdown. So that was really encouraging to see. Fournette seems to be making smarter decisions when it comes to hitting the hole and stuff, not necessarily trying to engage in contact, but instead going for the extra yards and hitting the hole, which I think is going to kind of really lead to a much better year than he had last year. He had a good year last year, but I think this year he might really be able to take the next step in year two.
I definitely agree. When we come back, we will begin to wrap things up with some PFF grades and leave you guys a little taste of what you're going to get the rest of the week. So Chris loves to utilize PFF grades, part of a partnership that we have here at Locked On with PFF. We're going to be giving you their grades on a weekly basis, try and incorporate it as much as we can, let the fans give their takes if they like the grade, if they don't like the grade. It'll be a really great way to stir up some conversation. So I haven't bothered to look at them for the preseason, these grades. I know Chris has. He was telling me a little shocking thing before we started recording this show. The highest graded Jaguars offensive lineman or player in general, I can't remember. But Chris, go ahead and give us some of those grades and we'll talk about some of the interesting ones.
All right. So Josh Wells, who played 11 total snaps at left tackle. Look at that, 11. He had 8 pass blocking, 3 run blocking. Had an offensive grade of 86.5. which is near elite. He had an 82.3 rating on pass blocking and an 89 rating on run blocking. Folks, I think Josh Wells might need to replace Cam Robinson.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. I was not an advocate of bringing back Josh Wells this
year. Neither was I.
The logic was that he was cheap labor, a guy that was a part of the scheme for a while, is comfortable here. But, I mean, he's so bad. I don't understand where this grade even came from. He didn't stand out to me during the game at all.
If we want to be more, for realsies, Leonard Fournette.
Don't ever say that word again.
Fournette had almost a better pass blocking rating than Josh Wells.
Well, that is a good thing, and that's something that we mentioned to him at his press conference, not necessarily his PFF grade, but his comfort coming around as an all-round back, and a big emphasis point has been his pass blocking, where he does feel like he has improved. He doesn't want to admit that he's improved because he likes to think that he's great at everything, but he did say to us that he does feel like he's come along as a pass, as a blocker. And I think he's really learned a lot from running back coach Tyrone Wheatley.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say that pass blocking was a bad thing for Fournette last year. At least I don't remember it being. But it's always nice to see your fourth overall pick kind of taking that next step in things other than running the football. Pass blocking, receiving. He was perfect on the night for receiving. I believe he was 5 for 5 or 3 for 3, one of the two. But Fournette had himself a pretty good night all around, whether it showed agility, pass blocking, and just overall and receiving. So that's really good to see. I know there's some people in the fantasy football world that are probably going to take him first overall. I won't say names, but it's whoever has the first overall pick in our league.
I'm not ready to even talk about fantasy. I'm keeping my strategy pretty quiet.
Yeah, I mean, wait, you don't want to draft 4 running backs like you did last year?
Okay. Well, no, there's a strategy there that we're not going to talk about right now.
Did it work, Zachary, drafting 3
no
starting running backs?
It didn't, because I had my running back that I was specifically targeting stolen from me, not once, but twice, back-to-back rounds, by Ryan Kieran.
Whomst were they?
I don't even care to remember at this point. All I know is Devontae Freeman was not going to be my pick in the first round, and then he was, because my guy was scooped up right in front of me. But now I'm in a prime position to pick the two guys that I want. I know this for a fact. I'm ready to go.
I'm going to purposely reach just to ruin your strategy.
You don't even know who I want. I could have a multitude of options that I'd be happy with.
That's fine.
I'm sure people aren't here to listen to us bicker about fantasy, but if you are looking for fantasy content, be sure to stop by the Locked On Jaguars website. We have a guy there, Zach DeWitt. He's doing a little bit of work for us covering the Jaguars fantasy options on a weekly basis. He's been doing a great job so far. He'll really get things rolling once the regular season comes around with analysis pieces, trade info, waiver wire claims, all that kind of good stuff. I'm sure with Marquise Lee being out, there's going to be a lot of stuff coming up on the receiver group. So be sure to throw him a follow at Zach DeWitt, ZakDeWitt on Twitter, and check out all his stuff over at Locked On Jaguars. And speaking of following along the Locked On Jaguars crew, I figured that'll pretty much do it for us today. Be sure to go subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you can find podcasts. Bookmark the Locked On Jaguars website, LockedOnJaguars.com. Follow Chris and myself on Twitter at Zach_Goodall, at Misto Cristofo, as well as the Locked On handle at Locked On Jaguars. And we will catch up with you guys tomorrow.